Just to pause, anything that I've said that's not clear or needs amplification, because I'm winding my way in, so I'm not sure I'm being as clear as I could be. Maybe it's pretty obvious.
The main point I'm picking up is that the attitude that's required is a sort of extension of one's attitude towards oneself to other people, not a negation of one's
Not a negation of the attitude that we naturally have to ourselves. You could think of it in a number of different ways. In a way, you could say it's a negation because it's so different from the way in which we normally go about it. But it's not a negation in the sense that you hate yourself. Those chilling words, "Unless a man hate himself, he shall not inherit life everlasting." That is not what Buddhism is saying. If it is, I am not a Buddhist, I assure you. It's saying that just as you love yourself, you want to learn to love others, and you take, even in a way, your love for yourself as the model for the love that you want to have for others. That's in a way what the text is saying. Whether when that's taken place, what you're left with is precisely an extension of your love for yourself is debatable, but that at least is a way of approaching it, that probably a better way of approaching it than thinking in terms of negating yourself and cutting yourself off, especially from the culture that some of us come from. The mula kleshas, the atma kleshas. Well, let's start with the cognitive side. There's atma moha, which is ignorance about self. Atma drishti, which is views about self. Atma moha is more like kind of blindness. You don't know who you are or what you are, as it were. Atma drishti is that you think you do know. As I say, the passive and active aspects of ignorance. It would be all right if we just didn't know and knew that we didn't know. But we don't know, and we don't know that we don't know. In fact, we think we do know. So we've got all sorts of ideas about what it is to be a self. And fundamentally, we believe that we are an independent, self-existent self interacting with an independent, self-existent world. So that's the cognitive side. The affective side is atma sneha, which means, in even modern Indian languages, it means affection, or even just love, even romantic love, it can mean. But cherishing is, I think, a really good translation, because it's got very positive connotations as well. And atmamana, which means pride in self. So your attitude of having identified yourself and caring deeply about yourself, of comparison of yourself with others. The fundamental position is that we all believe that we are really the most important person, and that everything revolves around us. At this level, that's what it really means. It means considering that you are uniquely important. And we all do it. And in a way, this approach of thinking of them as innate relieves one of the feeling that it's a terrible sort of guilty secret. Something we all do quite naturally and spontaneously, and that if we use it correctly, rightly, can be the basis for our going beyond it. In a way, what we're doing in the Metta Bhavana is, first of all, identifying and accepting our Atma Sneha. You could almost say that the first stage of the Metta Bhavana is taking your natural love of yourself and beginning to make it more rational, well, more effective, by recognizing your real interests, your real where real benefit lies for you. But you're taking something that's quite natural and spontaneous. You're not trying to force something on yourself or force something out of yourself. And then you're beginning to learn to extend that to others, so that you include them more and more in your field of concern. So again, I think this is very, very important to recognize in any discussion of the need for self-transcendence and of learning to cherish others, that you're doing that by taking your natural self-love and raising it up, making it more subtle, more effective, more reasonable, directing it in a way that's more truly in your interests and benefit. And I think that a quite important sort of thing for us all to do in trying to practice spiritually is to keep in touch with that basic self-love and not to allow ourselves to fall into, especially us with a Christian background, to fall into the idea that suppressing ourselves or doing away with ourselves in some sort of sense is transcending ourselves. It's just a kind of perverted self-love. Even self-hatred is a form of self-love. You think you're uniquely important enough to hate, if you see what I mean. I mean, after all, why hate yourself if you don't think you're important? Like that famous line in Casablanca, isn't it, where the little creep comes up to Johnny and says, you hate me, Johnny, don't you? No, you despise me, Johnny, don't you? And Johnny says, no, I don't despise you. If I thought about you, I might. Even our bad feelings about ourselves are based upon our real strong feeling about ourselves, if you see what I mean. And again, that's quite a helpful thing in teaching and talking about metta bhavana, that there's nobody who does not primarily love themselves, even those who appear to hate themselves. You wouldn't bother if you didn't love yourself. Anyway, you see why I'm making a little bit of this, that you take the words, may I always cherish all beings, and you can very easily start to think in terms of self-negation in what I consider to be a very unhealthy sense. And really, in a way, I'd say that cherishing all beings is a completion of self-cherishing, and depends, first of all, on a healthy self-appreciation and a healthy self-love. But it does go beyond it. And that is what the burden of the text is. That's what the text is trying to educate us in and give us tools for doing. And yes, it does seem to me that the way in which you cherish all beings lies through cherishing yourself. And because in the first place you cherish yourself, you begin to be able to cherish others.